Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off The Ball.
With Paddy Power.
Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
You're welcome along. It's Thursday's football show. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock. And it'll almost be a relief to get back into the madness of the Premier League this weekend. Two live commentaries coming your way on Sunday's Off The Ball. We've got Newcastle against Spurs. First up at 2 o'clock. Myself and Kenny Cunningham will be covering that one. And then it's Aston Villa against Fulham. Stephen Doyle will be alongside Vinnie Perth with full live commentary. John will be here with Johnny and Dan, putting a cap on the week in Irish football as well on Saturday afternoon. We'll chat with Stewie Byrne to get his thoughts in a little while. And also look ahead to Shamrock Rovers against Dundalk in the Airtricity League, a huge game tomorrow night. But right now I'm joined on the line by football writer Rafa Honigstein. Evening, Rafa.
Good evening.
So there is a lot going on in German football, to put it mildly, both at international level and at club level. We might talk about what happened first with the international side and the defeat to North Macedonia. 35-game unbeaten run in World Cup qualifying coming to an end, stretching all the way back to that famous 5-1 defeat by England in 2001. There have been a lot of shocks around the World Cup qualifiers this week. Was this the biggest of them? How has this gone down in Germany?
It didn't go down very well because you remember that Joachim Löw has announced that he will step down after the Euros. That brought him a lot of goodwill, a lot of positivity towards him. And the first couple of games were pretty decent. 4-0 against Iceland, 1 against Romania. But then that third game was totally devoid of any sense of urgency, of application. There was no rhythm. The players looked all very tired, all very uninspired. Defensively, Germany were poor. They experimented with a system that didn't really work, playing sort of a hybrid three that became a four without the ball. And with that one bad result, and it was a pretty bad result and a bad performance, all that nice bit of good feeling towards Löw has instantly gone and dissipated. And now you're looking at 2 months with people wondering, is he still the right one? Should Germany pull the plug on him? Can we risk Germany playing so badly that they crash out at the Euros? It was that kind of shocking result that brings up all those questions again.
Is that a realistic proposition that he may be fighting for his job between now and the start of the Euros?
People are gunning for him. Some tabloids are suggesting that the German FA should get rid of him now. I should look for some caretaker manager, maybe Stefan Kunz from the under-21s, although he's not doing the most amazing job with the under-21s either. I think the German FA, being a fairly conservative, pragmatic, very slow to react sort of organization, I don't see them making that knee-jerk move. But Löw has gone from a lot of people wishing the best for him going into Euros to lots of people fearing the worst. And that's no mean feat if you consider the caliber of the opposition that he was up against in those three games. And he really didn't do himself any favours at all.
In terms of the players who could come back, Thomas Müller, Jerome Boateng, Mats Hummels, the trio of 2014 World Cup winners who were basically just let go from the squad a couple of years ago. The fact he's leaving, has that changed his thought process on those three?
Well, we don't know. In theory, it should make it easier for him to step down from that decision and to bring them back in, because he no longer has to worry about a transition. He no longer has to worry about, you know, the dressing room. How will they react? This is just a short-term measure geared for maximum impact. And after what happened now, yesterday, I think it'd be a huge surprise if at least Thomas Müller doesn't come back, because Müller provides something that this team is still lacking: a bit of experience, a lot of presence, a bit of coaching. You know, he's very vocal, especially when there's not a lot of energy on the pitch with no crowds, etc. He helps every coach by coaching the players around them, by bringing that energy. And I'd be hugely surprised if Müller doesn't come back. And even I think Mats Hummels has a great chance, although Hummels is perhaps somebody who Löw will find more difficult, I think, to persuade to come back. I think Hummels was more hurt personally than Müller was. Boateng, I think, has lesser chances because Germany don't need that many centre-backs. They're pretty well positioned. But I think Löw might look at him as well.
Looking at the team then that started against North Macedonia, Ter Stegen in goals, Rudiger alongside Chan and Ginter, as you said, the defence was sort of changing between a 3 and 4. Ahead of them then, Goretzka and Kimmich, the two Bayern Munich midfielders alongside Ilkay Gundogan, who scored a goal and is in the form of his life right now. Leroy Sané and Robin Gosens, and then Serge Gnabry and Kai Havertz were the players who started the game. Timo Werner came off the bench and had a horror show after he came on. Missed an absolute sitter. Are there many players missing? Is that the likely starting 11 if you leave out those three players returning?
Yeah, you still have Niklas Süle, who's doing quite well after lengthy injuries, coming back into the fold at Bayern, looking pretty good. You have Toni Kroos, of course, who is the captain who went home nursing an injury. But that's really it, by and large. You have the two Leipzig fullbacks, Halstenbeck and Klostermann, who could also come back into the starting 11. So there are options. And if you were to add somebody like Hummels at the back, if you were to add Müller, I think the starting 11 with Neuer instead of Ter Stegen, of course, is pretty decent. But of course, there's a sense that Löw hasn't really been able to get the most out of the squad because of his frequent changes and his lack of sharpness and urgency himself. I think after a while, teams tend to represent and mirror their coaches, and he hasn't been able, I think, in the last couple of years to creditably convince this squad that this is a new beginning and they're going for it, and there's a sense of, you know, we're starting something new. It is still all very sort of measured and a little bit comfortable, and it was lacking that that spark that you need.
It looks like the type of squad, when you see the skill set that is available with Sané and Gnabry and Havertz and even Werner if he was playing off the left, they're just missing a Robert Lewandowski type figure. A real world-class quality number nine would transform this Germany team. Or do they expect that Werner will become that player?
Well, they hope that Werner can be that player again, because he had that sort of season before he went to Chelsea. He scored, I think, 26 goals in the Bundesliga, so He was beginning to be that type of player, but of course he's lost his confidence. And again, I think Löw hasn't helped him by effectively sidelining him for these three games. He came on as a substitute, but the signal was quite clear that right now he's not good enough, and Kai Havertz as a false nine was preferred to him. So that is another issue. Of course, Germany not having a real number nine has been a problem now for the last 20 years, give and take, and they've managed to compensate through various means. But yes, I agree with you. If Lewandowski somehow could be persuaded to find a German grandmother somewhere and FIFA can change the rules, then we'd be very happy.
Well, listen, I think Robert Lewandowski is at such a level. If Robert Lewandowski could be convinced to be Irish, we'd probably be doing okay at World Cup finals and European championships.
That might be even beyond him.
On Timo Werner then, and his confidence levels, because he is one of these players, it's seems you can tell instantly where he is with his football. He just can't hide it with Chelsea. When another chance goes a-begging, you can almost feel the shoulder slump. It's like watching Rory McIlroy playing golf, that when things aren't going well, all of his demeanour, all of his body image is reflected in that lack of confidence. Has he gone through periods like this in his career before, and is there anything that can be done to just sort of work him out of it, or is that just down to Thomas Tuchel and what he can do over the next couple of months?
He had a spell at Stuttgart when there was so much pressure on him, having come through as a youngster there through the ranks, and everybody sort of thought he's the messiah. But then Stuttgart were going down, that things turned against him. He then resurrected his career very effectively at Leipzig. Sometimes opposition fans were booing him and singing pretty rude songs because they felt he was a diver, but by and large, he shrugged it off. And underneath that, but looks maybe like a soft touch, there's a pretty hard-nosed, you know, battle-hardened guy underneath there that can deal with these setbacks and has done in the past. And I was surprised that he's been so affected. I think everyone else is. Tuchel has a habit of taking these type of players and rebuilding their confidence. He did it so effectively with Henrik Mkhitaryan at Dortmund, who was unrecognizable when he was there. He went to really being a world-class player under Tuchel. So if anyone can do it, he can. And there was signs that he was getting better. But my fear is that this miss and this kind of performances we saw over the last few games have set this comeback, or you know, this return to form back a little bit again. And of course, time is running out for him.
What's his best position in your opinion? Is it coming in off the left-hand side, or is it playing in that more central role?
I think his best position is the one that Chelsea have found for him, which is to be just off a centre forward, in that, you know, mix between a number 10 and a winger. So a second striker, if you will. That's where he was most effective for Leipzig. But Germany don't really have that position for him because there's no one really ahead of him. So they often play him in a three with a lot of interchanging, and it works by and large, but it'd be ideal behind a slightly more physical centre forward of the Giroud or even Tammy Abraham make. But we don't really have that kind of guy, at least not someone that Löw trusts enough to lead the line for Germany. So we'll have to find other ways to get him into those positions again.
Germany were one of the countries that took a stand against the Qatar World Cup over the last week. They wore T-shirts to show support for Qatar migrant workers. The starting side each wore a black shirt with one letter in white on it that spelled out human rights. That followed the Norwegian players wearing T-shirts that had the message human rights on and off the pitch. Leon Goretzka was talking after their opening World Cup qualifier, said, "We have the World Cup coming up and there will be discussions about it. We wanted to show we're not ignoring that. We have a large reach and we can use it to set an example for the values we want to stand for." Where does this end from a players' protest point of view?
Well, I think, first of all, the question is where does it begin? And I think we've reached a point where the players felt that they had to take a stand, inspired by others around them. And it is a genuine stand. It's come from the team itself. It's come from players getting together and feel that, you know, we should make a stand here. We should tell this concern. We will not be able to change things as far as, you know, playing the World Cup is concerned, as far as Bayern Munich having a Qatari brand on their shirt. All these things are a little bit beyond us, but we can make clear that we want to see these things being considered and being pressure being put effectively on the Qataris, but anyone else as well, because they didn't necessarily restrict it to Qatar. It was a human rights protest, which, you know, unfortunately is relevant for many, many countries. But of course, in the context of the World Cup qualifiers, it is geared towards Qatar. Toni Kroos also came out today or yesterday in his podcast being very vocal about labor you know, conditions in Qatar and human rights, and made it a point to talk about that. So I think these are all positive signs. I think it shows you that the players themselves are uncomfortable with the situation, but I think we have to be realistic and don't expect them to now take this further and escalate and say, you know, we're not going to go to Qatar, we're going to down tools. I don't think this should be expected of them. And I don't think necessarily the federations are in a position to do that either. But just to keep the conversation going, to keep the public pressure on, is probably a pretty good thing at this point.
Toni Kroos said about the potential for a boycott in 2022 that the visibility of the World Cup may draw even more attention to these problems, and a boycott would probably not change much about the situations for the workers there. It is going to be fascinating to see then, considering, as you say, this is the beginning, as to, by the time the World Cup comes around in 2022, as to what sort of protest the players involved at that World Cup make, because you'd imagine that this is going to gain momentum over the next 18 months or so, and that FIFA, who right now say that they are fully in support of freedom of expression, may have some difficult days ahead.
Yeah, but I don't think, you know, we should shed too many tears for FIFA and their difficulties. They awarded the competition to Qatar against their own recommendations, of course. If you remember the technical report suggesting that this is not a good idea, they went with it anyway for reasons that well, we can only surmise, but you know what happened to a lot of Exco members since. So yes, they might have a difficult spot, but at the same time, I mean, that is the beauty of it, if you will, because yes, sports is being used as a vehicle to sportswash, to change the relationship that people have with countries that they probably wouldn't know about, to gain some kind of soft power. But at the same time, it also increases the heat. And a lot of countries, a lot of players, I think, understanding suddenly the amount of attention that they can gather, that they can get for these issues. And I'm sure they'll make a stand of one way or the other. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see rainbow symbols being shown in Qatar and all these kind of things that will not go down too well with the local organizers, but that FIFA will just have to bite the bullet on that one.
All our football here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblecare.ie. Erling Haaland then. Mino Raiola's been on the private jet. He not too bothered about climate change and all of that. He was in Barcelona earlier today, and then he flew to Madrid for conversations with both Barcelona and Real Madrid about a potential move this summer. So Erling Haaland's release clause of $75 million doesn't come valid until next summer, the summer of 2022. So there could well be a bidding war this year. This transfer saga seems to change every week. From a couple of months ago, looking as though, well, the Spanish clubs didn't have the wealth anymore and they wouldn't be able to afford to get into the conversation around the likes of Erling Haaland or Kylian Mbappe. That seems to have changed rather quickly. Right now, does it look as though Spain is his most likely destination?
I'm still doubtful as to whether the situation on the ground has actually changed. There's no harm in meeting Haaland. There's no harm in meeting his dad. You know, at the very latest, that next year he will be affordable, even to Spanish clubs, the way things stand. But I cannot see Barcelona, nor Real Madrid, certainly not Barcelona, going to Dortmund and say, you know what, the only way to change your mind is to effectively offer double the release clause now, and we will force your hand with 150 million euros. Maybe they can find some kind of crazy bank branch manager who wants to do it, but I just don't see any realistic prospect of it. So I think a lot of this is now geared towards what happens next year. A lot of it is political. You know, if you're in charge of these clubs, you have to be seen to be at least trying. Then you can still turn around and say, sorry, couldn't do it, but you have to meet these guys. You have to show to your supporters or to your voters, in the case of the two big Spanish clubs, that you are interested, that you want to pursue this. But I don't see either of them being in a position to change Dortmund's mind on this or to force their hand. And I think if we see any move at all, it'll have to come from a club that is in a much more advantageous financial position. And I'm thinking maybe of a Manchester City or Paris Saint-Germain here, or maybe even Chelsea could just about do it. But I think even for them, it'd be very, very difficult.
What is Borussia Dortmund's hand right now? So 15 months time, they get 75 million for Erling Haaland. Yet this summer, they can get double that. But obviously, they lose the player. But a lot can happen in the space of 12 months. So do they want to hold on to him until the summer of 2022?
Yeah, I think it's genuine when they say we don't want to sell. Sometimes it can be just positioning for the financial negotiation. But I think they are genuine.
Is that not just bad business?
Well, I'm not sure about that, because you have to evaluate how much is Haaland worth to you. If he is the difference between finishing fifth and fourth, which he could well be this season, that is actually your 80 million euros. So you might make now 80 million euros, but then if you finish fifth next year, you've lost 80 million euros. There's also a knock-on effect. If you lose Erling Haaland, you're sending a bad message to the rest of the squad. You're telling them, you're not reliable because you've said you're not going to sell, but you sold anyway. You're telling them that you're not really going to go for it next year under new manager Marco Rosa, who a lot of people have still high hopes for as far as challenging for a title is concerned. You're basically giving up, and it would send a very bad message. They want to sell, I think, Jadon Sancho if possible, but they want to really avoid selling Erling Haaland for those reasons. And it could well be that if they miss out on the Champions League, they feel it is too much money to turn down. But my hunch is that the price that they've mentioned, and 150 might not be the end of it, there's talk of 180, is actually not price to sell, but price to not sell.
Right.
And I think that might still be the most likely outcome.
who is the kingmaker in the Haaland circle? Is it the player himself? Is it his father, Alf Inge Haaland? Or is it Mino Raiola?
I think it's a pretty collaborative process. I'm sure they all have their own views. I think the father is obviously very involved. He takes a perhaps slightly longer view than an agent would. They moved to Dortmund rather than Man United, for example, because they felt Dortmund were able to offer guaranteed game time as a number nine, which is more valuable than maybe an extra couple of hundred thousand a month, but not being 100% sure where you stand in the hierarchy of the team. I think that decision has borne out. And now it's a question of, do you need to make that step now, or would it be worth waiting? You asked me about bad business. It'd be bad business for the player to move now, because the 75 million euros or 100 million euros that the buying club saves on him by not buying him this year, but buying him next year for 75, that money's going to find its way back to the player. So it doesn't actually make a lot of financial sense for him now to go for double the amount of money rather than wait one more year, even if you consider the fact that he would make obviously a lot more money for the next club for that extra season. So I still think this is a lot of positioning, this is a lot of theater, this is a lot of Raiola trying to be very visible, which is his style. But Dortmund tend to be pretty reliable when it comes to taking a certain stance. With Dembele, it was different. Dembele went on strike effectively, and Barcelona made such a ridiculous offer that Dortmund felt, okay, fine, 120 million euros going to 130, I think, yes, please take him. And of course, that was a great decision. I think Haaland's going to be a different story, though.
Yeah, what a position to be in for a 20-year-old. It's almost like it's a Bosman, even if there is 75 million going to exchange hands in 2022. From his point of view, he's got so many cards in his favour. Rafa, great stuff as always. Raphael Honigstein there from The Athletic talking about what has been going on in German football, which is a hell of a lot over the last week with that defeat to North Macedonia, and also all the speculation around Erling Haaland's future. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to check in with Stewie Byrne.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
All right, welcome back. It's Thursday's Off the Ball on the Football Show. Stewie Byrne is with us. Good evening, Stewie.
Good evening, Nathan. How are you? You okay?
I'm all right. Did you get your glass of wine after the match on Saturday night?
I got one glass, yes, which led to many, many others, but I did, yeah.
Have you had a glass of wine this evening, Stewie?
No.
Good.
No, it's just breathing at the moment on the worktop, so as soon as I finish here, I'll have a glass of wine.
Oh, very good. Here, listen, you like to treat yourself. It's Thursday. Sure, it's practically the weekend. Holy Thursday.
I've worked hard all week, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to hijack the show for 30 seconds.
Oh, no.
Right.
Are you going to sing us a song?
No.
Live Stewie.
It's music related. There is a huge battle going on at the moment as we speak. Okay, this is soccer related as well. Ireland versus the rest of the world. We have an Irish artist who is in line for Album of the Week for Those I Love. Mm. Okay, he's a Shelbourne supporter. He's up against Justin Bieber.
Oof.
Now, he's brutal, Justin Bieber. Okay. He's Canadian. They're muck at football. They're worse than us. We got to beat him, Nathan. So if you have access to iTunes, please buy his album, will you? I think we've got very, very little time to do it. Might even have less than an hour. I think he's 20 behind.
20?
So it's working class Ireland against privileged pop, whatever you want to call it.
Which is everything that you're all about, Stewie. For Those I Love is, if you were watching Tommy Tiernan a couple of weeks back, you'll have seen, I think it's David Balfe's his name, on
David
talking
Balfe,
to Tommy
Shelburne
Tiernan
supporter.
About what he, and he was just one night randomly watching Jules Holland, and he was on, I was saying, is that a Shells jersey? This is bloody brilliant. So 20, all right, do it for Stewie. That'll be you
on,
soon,
Stewie.
That'll be you. And remember, it all started off the ball. Has your view, you were quite forthright, as always, on Saturday night, with your frustration, not just with the quality of Irish player, but also, I think, with the selection and the substitutions. Did anything change from the Qatar friendly then on Tuesday night?
No, I mean, I think probably maybe a better performance, but I suppose
really, it's been a week of reflection for myself, Nathan, on all of this, to be quite honest with you. But I actually don't normally do this, but I put out a wee video on Instagram just to maybe explain my thoughts. I went into my back garden on Sunday. Sorry for myself, as I'm sure everybody else did. I'm stuck in building a shed at my back garden, and I just had a little think, and I was listening to yourselves on Sunday, listen to a few other things as well, you know, because obviously the reaction on Sunday, I knew it was going to be everywhere, you know. And I think we really need just to get behind the manager for the rest of the campaign. I think we need to be very, very realistic, Nathan, with what's gone on in this country in the past 20 or 30 years as regards football and the neglect and the underinvestment in the game here in Ireland, I'm suggesting. And it's become very, very obvious now that this whole strategy that we had, if you want to call it a strategy, that we would have had 20, 30 years ago, of just shipping players off to England and that'll take care of itself and that's great. It just isn't going to work anymore. We're heading into a future now where we need to rely on both. We need to rely on players in England, and we're going to have to rely on players that are playing here. Because if we can grow the game here, improve the game here, invest in the game here, you know, what we have, what the benefits we get here is we get players. We're playing week in, week out, playing in European football. And I think it can only be a benefit for not just the game here, but also for the national soccer team. So this manager needs to be given the campaign, and then if things don't improve, then that'll take care of itself. Mm. You know, I don't think we should have this sort of quick fire reaction that the football is not working. Get rid of it. Let's get back to banging it forward, and we might just
well just briefly on the football not working, because John Giles was on earlier and he was very good on that, looking at the players, and he was going down through the generations, and there's literally nobody better to analyse this, because he made his Ireland debut in 1959, player, manager, pundit, has seen it all, every game, and he feels this is the worst group of players that Ireland have had since he made his debut back in 1959, and at the same time felt that because of that, maybe Stephen Kenny needs to be a little bit more pragmatic about what he wants. About, it's all well and good talking the talk in advance about what he wants Irish football to be, but that right now, unfortunately, he doesn't have the players to play the style of football he wants. So he's going to have to come up with a system that gets the best out of the talent that actually he has in front of him. Is he doing that at the moment?
To be fair, he probably isn't to the best ability. However, you know, how come we play like that in the first half against Serbia, or 60 minutes against Serbia, against what is now turning out to be a very, very good team, a very good Serbian side, away to them? You know, from what I can see, the ingredients are there. You know, it's just need to get the measurements right, or whatever.
Stuart, your line isn't great there. It's breaking up. What we might do is we might just dial you back up again and get you on a better line, because I know you got a lot to say on this. I think we got a little bit of something to get us going through this.
Young Giles, he seems to be an inside forward with a very great future.
Oh, there's no question about that at all. He's a wonderful player. He's a very quick football brain. And he was given the opportunity to use it.
The rest of the was headed up by Johansson. Comes to Giles, who shoots, and he scores! It's a wonderful goal!
Unforgettable.
Well, I think it was the climate of the times, Jim. You know, I played Manchester United and had my leg broken at Birmingham. And I think during the 60s, it was a very, very tough game. And there was a lot of physical stuff, and I was regarded as a skillful player. And when you're a skillful player, you're a target. And my attitude was, well, if I'm going to make a living in this game and I want to make it, then I'm going to have to be as tough as everybody else. And I set out to do that.
Lorimer will play it wide again for Giles to drive it. And there it is from Johnny Giles.
When we came out of the second division, we scrambled a lot, and we played scrambly football. Very tenacious, very resilient in what we're doing, and at times too naughty for our own good.
And that looked very much like a right hook by Johnny Giles.
All the things that they say about Leeds, the bad things they say about it, they knew as players that we were a great team.
Giles, Alistair Brown, and again Giles. Good try, it's worth! Oh yes, Johnny Giles!
Bobby Collins was, you remember Bobby Collins? Bobby Collins was a great Scottish player that played for Leeds. And he used to have a saying for the players, when he was rating players. Do you know what he used to say? Would he kill his granny? It's true. Would he kill his granny?
Yeah.
And Bobby Collins would kill his granny
right.
And his grandfather.
Okay,
to win,
so what we're
to,
saying
to win a
we're,
match.
What we're saying tonight then, that England have got to get a manager who knows all about back alleys.
Yeah.
And they got to have players who'll kill their grannies.
Duncan was a trickster anyway. He could do all sorts of tricks on and off the pitch. He could jump over a mini jar. Did you ever hear about that?
No.
Duncan McKenzie.
What?
What he did, actually, Jack, he sort of only strolled up to it two or three strides. And I honestly thought he was going to turn back and say, oh, look, lads, I'm only joking. Hopped over it. Hopped over the mini.
In one go?
In one go.
Franny Lee. You know, Franny was...
Man City.
Man City, yeah. Lad. And Franny could dish it about.
As the genius of John Giles. We'd be doing a montage of that about Stewie in a few years' time, but we'd be able to put his own music behind it. It'll be a magical, magical thing. Stewie Byrne is back with us. Everything okay?
I hope so, yeah.
We were just talking there then about Stephen Kenny, and before getting on to the greater problems within Irish football, does he need to suck it up and say, right now I cannot play the style of football I wanted to or expected to because the players just aren't where I needed them to be?
I think there's an element of that, Nathan. Yes, there is a case for that. You know, there is an element of you know you got to do what you got to do to get results to a certain point. You know, we've obviously we're trying to move away from the, you know, the hustle and bustle sort of style of play that has worked for us. There's no doubt it has worked for us, but it hasn't, so to speak. It's been quite difficult to watch sometimes. It's very much, you know, on the cuff, on the edge of your seat stuff. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Probably we might look back at the previous 10 years and say, you know, we weren't that bad. We weren't really that bad. We qualified for €2. We got a lot of great wins against Germany at home, among others. But when you really look back at how we played in those games, it was we got battered in some of them games and we just nicked a goal, like, you know. So those players that came through that era are now getting to the stage where they're in the twilight of their career. So we have to make, you know, a decision on, do we keep going with that sort of mentality with the players we have, or do we seriously try and change the whole culture around how we play football? And I'm for that, Nathan, but all of this is coming. It's one big bottleneck, you know, on top of the you know, what's happened in the FAI, what's happened in soccer in this country, along with the players just aren't coming through.
Mm.
And if they are coming through, Nathan, they're not playing at regular football at the top level.
That's an interesting point, Stewie. We're going to talk about this a lot more over the coming weeks. We spoke to Vinnie Perth about it, and we've had a huge reaction from people at grassroots level, League of Ireland level, throughout the underage as to what should be done, and it's very hard to get any level of agreement. It is interesting, though, with this new generation that's coming through, Stewie. So, having had a barren spell of no players, now there are players, the likes of Jason Malumbi and Jason Knight, but they're not at the best Premier League club, so it would make you question, are we producing the right type of players? Are we producing the players that, when they're going to England, have the ability and the skill set that those clubs want? Is that what the emerging talent programs are doing? Are they giving what actually the best clubs in the world want?
I don't know the answer to that, but based on the evidence that's coming through, maybe there's a gap there. You know, we have to look at it realistically and say, are we really producing the type of players that we want? But I'd counteract that by saying, look at what was achieved in Iceland. I mean, look at Luxembourg the other night. You know, they don't have players playing at the top level. I don't think the Icelandic team do either. The Icelandic FA underwent a huge transitional change back in, I can't remember the year. I think it was the late 90s, and you know, reaped huge, you know, reaped a lot of benefits from that.
They did, and I'm always wary of the Iceland example, Stewie, because Iceland were dull as dishwater to watch.
Yeah, so I get that, but what point I am trying to make here is that, you know, it can transition and we can kind of change. But Nathan, I'm going to go back to this because I've been talking about it recently. I spoke about it last year. I've been talking about it for a long time now. We have to, you know, I think we have to relook at our relationship with soccer in this country. You know, we're infatuated with England. It's England or nothing. why does it have to be England or nothing? Why? You know, we're crying out for investment in the league, in the game here. Huge investment that I believe will give us huge rewards. And I know it'll give us huge rewards because you look at the quality of player that have come through this international team in the last 10 years. All of them, most of them came from League of Ireland background, okay? There is a product here. There is a huge potential here in this country. It's going to take a big investment. It's going to take a big, huge mindset. But this is only going one way. You know, look at the quality of squad of players that have been going to England that have been in the Irish team for the last 30, 20, 10, 5 years. It's just dropping all the time. Less and less Irish players are making it through the system because it's totally, and I'm talking about the English system, it's totally diluted.
It is. The Premier League is getting better and better and is arguably the best league in the world right now, which means people will want to watch it. People who want to be a part of that. It's right on our doorstep. The very best players in the world are there every weekend and we can go and see them and it's not going to cost us a fortune.
It will cost you a fortune. It will cost you a fortune because it's costing you a fortune because it's only going to get there and there. You know, you want to talk about Haaland, why someone's going to go out and fork out 200 million euro for him or something. It's because it's because you're paying for it. You're paying for it with your Sky Sports subscription or your BT subscription or the how much is the jersey going to cost in 5 years? Probably 200 euro. You're paying for all this. So are you really getting value for your money? I don't think so. I don't think the Premiership is as good as it's made out to be. I think it's highly overrated. And I think there's too much money gone into that game. And it's a monster out of control now. But I'm not really concerned about that. I'm more concerned about growing the game here in Ireland, getting Irish people to say, do you know what? You know, and off the back of COVID, when we've gone through a year where we want people to buy local, keep the local economy going, keep the Irish economy going, don't travel abroad, maybe holiday in Ireland, maybe, you know, build up that the local tourism economy here. Why can't we do the same for soccer? Or why can't we at least try to do the same for soccer? It's almost like we're afraid to talk about League of Ireland. Oh God, don't talk League of Ireland. Like, you know, I'm sure if he was good enough, he'd have gone to England.
Well, there's a massive mindset change needed because people huge have looked at the League of Ireland and rightly at an awful lot of clubs have looked at them and thought, this isn't for me. Like, we're talking about clubs that can't even clean the jacks and now thinking they're going to produce the next Damien Duff.
Nathan, I totally get it. And I know everything that's wrong with the game here. Everything. Okay. But what I know is right is that the quality of player is here, and if those players can get exposed regularly to a better quality of football week in, week out, the game will grow here. But we have to start somewhere, Nathan. You know, we're facing into a situation now where we could be in the complete doldrums in five years' time. Look at rugby. Look where rugby was 30 years ago. The pits. Look where rugby is now. Can you imagine, could you imagine Munster fans going over every week to watch Saracens or Wasps, or Leinster fans going over every week to watch, you know, Gloucester or whoever the case may be? There'd be murder.
But they're not any better. Those clubs aren't any better than Leinster or Munster.
The point is, the game of rugby has tapped into the community of Ireland and it's grown the game here sensibly, sustainably. It took time. We have to do the same. Very, very simple. It's as simple as that. And they're just so that the conversation has to at least begin. We're not having the conversation. It's just not there at the moment because, I mean, look, there's a number of reasons for that. Like, you know, but
I'd love to get the conversation going. And I mean, I knew I was coming on. I had to get this out here.
What's the first thing you do, Stewie? Considering the environment we're in, considering COVID, all the cutbacks that are coming, the difficulties, which can present an opportunity because you say an awful lot of people won't be able to go to England. They won't be able to afford the jerseys. Actually, this homegrown product now is something that should become more attractive to them. What would you do if we gave Stewie Byrne, run the League of Ireland next year? What could you implement, do you think, that would actually make a change?
So I tell you where we could start. We there has to be some sort of capital investment in grounds, okay? We did this for the construction industry back 20 years ago. We gave huge subsidies in terms of tax write-offs, reliefs, you know, all sorts of stuff. Maybe we can have some sort of a 10-year tax subsidy for investment in grounds. Maybe some developers could invest in certain grounds, not just rebuild grounds, but maybe add to them in terms of, take for example what's happening in Daly Mount. They're rebuilding the ground. What they're doing is they're turning it 90 degrees. They're using the same site, but they're building it. They're adding in a library, local restaurants, cafes, so that, you know, that becomes a community-oriented development. And that's in the interest of a developer, whoever, to do something like that, because they can get tenancies back on that. That it's that kind of thinking, Nathan. So it's that sort of stuff. Like, you know, I'm not going to be able to tell you here and now what we need to do. But that
just this evening, the government have approved a grant of nearly €4 million towards the development of a new ground for Finn Harps as part of the large-scale sport fund.
But that's fantastic. I didn't even know that. But that's where we're at. There has to be some sort of, they need a leg up. We need a leg up. Every other sport gets huge grants. Horse racing, I mean, you know, greyhound racing, huge grants that go there. But I mean, no one's lobbying the government for this stuff. The FAI don't know what they're doing. You know, we've got a new man in charge now. He's not Irish, so he's
well, that doesn't mean he can't do the job.
No, it should be. I was actually going to say, I would have thought the first thing he might have noticed when he went in there would be, why aren't domestic based players getting into the international team?
And he comes from a marketing background, so actually maybe that's exactly what you want. Exactly.
I was totally suggesting that it's a positive. He's no ties here. He hasn't got the pull of local politicians, whatever. He's completely a blank slate. And I would hope he may well be looking at this and going, do you know what? We need to do something about the game here. The job of the FAI is to grow the game. They don't do that. What they do, Nathan, is they just let all the English clubs look after the development of our players and say thanks very much.
Yeah, and that's a huge issue. Obviously, there have been changes and there have been the links up with the schoolboy clubs to the League of Ireland clubs that I know is a very controversial move, and you will find a clear split of people who feel this is the only way Irish football can progress and those who feel actually that it is going to kill off the production lines that were there through the schoolboy clubs. It does, and I touched on this earlier in the week, when you look through the stats of, like, Irish football has fallen off a cliff over the last few years. When you look at the production line of players from that class of 92 of Hendrick, Duffy, Brady, Doherty, Egan, all of that same age group, over the next 6 years, and the more I think about it, the more insane it is. Alan Brown was the only player, homegrown player, for the next 6 years that was involved against Luxembourg last week. He didn't play, from what I understand, at 15s and 16s level for Ireland. So when you think about that, that's a full Irish under 15 squad for six consecutive seasons that not a single player emerged to play for the senior team. I would love to go, and we might try and do this over the coming weeks, and find out what happened to all those players. Where are they? Where have they disappeared to? Did they go to English academies, 15 of them, and just not make it and give up on the game? Like, where are all those players? I know some of them are still around, Jack Byrne of that age, but like, where are they?
Yeah, I well believe they did. That's another issue that isn't being advertised here. Are people aware of the percentages that make it? It's less than 1%. And I say the percentages of these kids, wonderful kids that are going away at such an early age, 15, 16, maybe even younger, the percentage of them that don't make it and then pull out of the game is probably much higher than that, which is a damning indictment on the association here. That just shouldn't be happening. You know, why isn't the option there, although this is definitely starting to grow now, but why isn't the option there of playing
in the League of Ireland. Excuse me.
You're all right. You're all right.
You know,
get a drink of water if you need it.
You know, why isn't that an option? Now, it is becoming more of an option because you only have to look at the players that have really done their stuff for us in the last decade. You know, the Keith Fahey, Wes Houlihan, Jack Bourne, Kevin Doyle. God, you know, I'll just keep going. They all played league. They all played senior level here domestically. You know, played European football, high level, high standard, like, you know, and then developed up to the age of 21, 22 in some cases, maybe even older. You know, Sean Maguire, I don't know how old he was when he went, he might have been nearly 24. But, you know, it was a huge benefit to these players to play here. So we have to leverage that, but we have to build on it. We can't do it, Nathan, by me going on and going, you know, giving. I sound like, I mean, people are probably listening to me going, I heard he goes again talking about League of Ireland and on. He was talking about a League of Ireland player getting into the international team.
Well, look, we need to keep having and the conversations, Dewey. And ironically, tomorrow night is the biggest game of the season, Shamrock Rovers against Dundalk, and we have about 60 seconds. Yeah. To talk about it. Yep. I know Rovers are missing Pico Lopez. He's got stuck in quarantine because the rules have changed. Dundalk have obviously had a stuttering start to the season. Rovers have only had the one match so far. So what are you expecting?
I wouldn't call it a stuttering start. That's been poor start for Dundalk. Really poor. They're in, you know, they need to get a result here, definitely. They can't afford to lose this one. More so for, I suppose, just the whole confidence level within that squad. You know, we had an awful lot of talk in the build-up to the start of the season with regards to the management situation, and a lot of money being invested in Dundalk in players, in wages, and there's a lot on the line. And if they get beaten tomorrow night, they are, you know, they're in a bad way. But it's a huge game for them. I mean, Rovers find themselves in a very good situation. Didn't play last week, and nobody was able to put one over on them, really, like, you know. But very early start of the season, you know, you can't win leagues at the start of a season, but you can certainly lose them.
Yeah.
Dundalk lost their league title in the first 6 weeks last year.
Well, you think back to this game last season and the wonder goal and then Jack Burns' late winner and a packed house and... Well, it felt like the League of Ireland was actually in quite a good place at that stage. Unfortunately, the world went another way. Stewie, great stuff as always. Enjoy that glass of wine.
Thanks, Nathan. I will.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network.